Hello, I'm Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, and this is my podcast, Duchess, a podcast in which I explore the most historic homes in the UK and meet the inspiring women who lead them. As a daughter of a Welsh farmer, I grew up far away from the glamour and wealth of aristocracy. But my life changed forever when I fell in love and married my husband, the 11th Duke of Rutland. Suddenly, one of Britain's most historic buildings was not only my home, but under my care. I wanted to learn more about this world and hear the stories of the other women, like me, the custodians of these great homes. So, in this podcast, I will travel to breathtaking homes, learn incredible history, and meet the inspiring women who lead these estates today. So please do join me on my very special journey. This is Duchess, the podcast. Before we get started, I'd like to say thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Circle DNA. For those who may not know, Circle DNA is a company that specializes in finding smarter, easier, and more effective solutions to your health by testing your DNA. Listeners, you know how much I love to learn about family history and lineage, and I found my Circle Premium results absolutely fascinating. I learned so much about myself, from my diet and nutrition, skin and fitness, to common diseases and cancer risks. When my daughter Violet and I did the test, we even learned she had a sensitivity to spicy food. That explains why she has been kicking up a fuss at the dinner table for all these years. If you sign up to Circle DNA, you will receive your DNA testing kit in the post. Use the easy-to-follow testing instructions to self-swab at home. Send your completed swab to their laboratory for analysis, and within 3 weeks, you'll receive your results and personalized recommendations. You will also have the opportunity to book 2 complimentary consultations, one with a health coach and one with a genetic counselor. To learn more about Circle DNA, visit their website and use the code THEDUCHESS40 for 40% off their DNA test kits. The Cotswolds has become one of Britain's most renowned regions for beauty. It's where you can find rambling fields of green, pastoral villages of honey-coloured stone, and it's where you'll find one of the most important grand homes of English history, Sudeley Castle, the absolute apothegy of grand home. Sudeley is replete with crenellations, slit arrow windows, watchtowers, stories of romance, tales of war, and ghostly legends. The stone of the castle has an amber quality to it, as if to hearken to its royal associations, and like jewels, the castle has changed hands many times. The current chatelaine, Lady Ashcombe, is a history maker in this regard as the longest serving chatelaine in Sudeley history. Lady Ashcombe has been a leading light in heritage for decades. I'm so excited to be finally meeting her. In the episode, Lady Ashcombe speaks candidly about the tragic loss of her husband so early in her life as a chatelaine. I get a background on the castle's immense royal history, and Lady Ashcombe describes the tales of ghostly monarchs that are said to walk Sudeley's halls today. But first, I wanted to learn more about Lady Ashcombe herself. I was very nervous about today because obviously in the journey of running Heritage, you always look to those above you who've done it so well and with such style. And you've been up there leading the ladies forward. And today I'm actually sitting and talking to you. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's a great pleasure. I'm very flattered.
But you weren't always a lady.
No.
You grew up in...
I'm American by birth. My family are from the South, Southern states, Virginia and Mississippi. And I've spent most of my childhood there, but I went to school in New York and in Paris and in Italy. So I've got a taste of Europe.
So how did you meet your first husband, who this house was handed down through generations to you?
Well, I met him in New York on a blind date.
And it was love at first sight.
Well, it wasn't exactly like that, but it didn't take very long. I mean, Mark was handsome and distinguished sort of Englishman, you know, and New York hostesses just loved the idea of asking him and everything. But the first time we went out, there was a bit of an embarrassment because his friend had a little bit too much to drink and got into a row with somebody, and we were expelled from El Morocco, the nightclub. And so he was so ashamed of that. He said, "Can I take you out again for lunch and make it up to you?" And so it was really from then. I think if that hadn't happened, he wouldn't have bothered, really.
And had you ever heard of Sudeley Castle?
No, I never had, no.
And can you remember, out of interest, the first time you saw this wonderful Tudor mansion?
Yes, I remember it extremely well because we drove down from London. I was visiting Mark from New York. This was before any, you know, engagement or anything happened. And I'd slightly been forewarned that to meet his mother might be a little bit intimidating. So I was kind of nervous and everything. And when we got here, it was in January, and it was a big moon, and there was this Gothic, spooky-looking building that got closer and closer. Then when we came in, there were these long corridors, and it was cold and it hadn't been modernized for, you know, since pre-war. Light bulbs hanging and creaks and groans and everything. And I was very respectably put in a room next door to his mother. And which started her standard poodles barking. And the weekend went on like that, from one awkward thing to another, and I couldn't wait to get away. I think then, if I'd thought that one day I was going to be the longest chatelaine of this spooky old house, I think I would have bolted on the spot.
How extraordinary.
And of course, we didn't expect that she was going to want to give it up. And I, in the first years of my life in England, I started a business, a design business. And Mark was in the financial world, and we had a lovely house in Holland Park, and we had two beautiful children and a whole life there. And all of a sudden, we had the knock on the door, and my mother-in-law said she felt it was time that Mark took over.
That must have been a gut-wrenching moment.
Well, it was shocking at the time, and the timing was so... I mean, we always knew that, well, yeah, one of these days, that sort of thing. But Mark never quite knew what he was going to do about it. And he always said, we'll have to open it to the public. And that's what people were doing in those, just starting, you know. Now, we had to get used to the idea and give up everything else.
That was a big step, moving out of a normal... lovely lifestyle. Not that this isn't,
yeah,
but it's a very different
world.
It's
a very, very different one, yes, exactly.
How long is it now that you've been running this amazing pile?
Well, you know, very tragically, Mark died very soon after we took it over in 1972, and 1972 will be 50 years next year.
That must have been... just the most...
It was.
All levels, yeah, traumatizing
just
moment.
Devastating. I mean, we had two small children, and we just starting to get used to living here ourselves. And, of course, he was in charge of making it work. But the devastating death duties on the estate and his sort of assets and his future assets as well were so enormous that I was told that there's no way we could keep the castle in the estate by the advisors, you know, the...
Trustees,
the legal sort of advisors and everything. But I guess I was so naive and I was so brokenhearted. I've just refused. I've said, no, my children must have their home. And so they did. And 50 years later, it's still here. But it's, as you well know, it's not that easy, is it?
But no one that I've met to date has quite had this as they start their journey at running Heritage, losing their beloved husband, having two small children and having the weight of death duties. And as you rightly say, how many times have these grey-suited individuals told us that it isn't possible? But the will of the chatelaine so often overcomes all, doesn't it?
I think that's true.
And so what did you have to sell? A lot of things?
Well, we had to sell literally half the estate and half the valuable picture collection. There was a fantastic 17th century Dutch picture collection at Zuidli that had been collected by James Morrison, who was my mother-in-law's family that made its way this way. And that's really what saved Zuidli.
The collection of art.
Collection of art, that's right, yes.
And so Mark, if he was going to talk to you now, I'm sure he does most probably, I should imagine, what would he say?
Well done, old girl, or something like that.
Great.
Yeah.
I think he found a very, very, he was very lucky finding such an extraordinary lady to carry on the mantle. But then this house has had extraordinary ladies, hasn't it? And we'll come on, if we may, to one of them, someone called Emma. Can you tell us?
Emma Dent, yes. Well, she was called Emma Brocklehurst, and she came from a wealthy silk manufacturing family in Cheshire. The Dents had acquired the house as a ruin. She brought it to life. Well, I'll just jump back a little bit before then. In the Civil War, this was a royalist stronghold of Charles I. Oliver Cromwell had come and fought for it and took it and burnt the roof off the main castle and desecrated it and desecrated the church and moved on, so it wasn't habitable anymore. For 180 years, it was just a mouldering ruin. Sightseers came. And then it was the Dents, this family of Dent brothers, the glove makers, who saw it coming over the hill, you know, which is actually a very romantic site, and they fell in love with it, so they bought it and started the process of renovation. And you know, they did an enormous amount, and they did acquire fantastic things, but it was really Emma Dent, the next generation, that I feel brought it so that we could understand it. Her diaries, her thoughts, her acquisitions, her relationship with Winchcombe, I mean it's all a big story. Yes.
And what was her relationship with Winchcombe?
Well, she was a great benefactress to Winchcombe. She brought the first water supply there, and you know, the church. But she didn't get on with the local vicar, and she made a few enemies, and she recorded all this in her diaries. That's why we know about it.
And what date was that?
1865, I think, or something like that.
Tell us about her textiles and the interest and fascination with textiles.
Well, she came from a textile family from Macclesfield, and she was a fantastic needlewoman herself, and so we've got a lot of the work that she did herself, which is, you know, really extraordinary. But she collected needlework as well. And she collected all eras of needlework and all different types of stitches and lace making. And of particular note is the christening canopy that was stitched by Anne Boleyn for her daughter, Princess Elizabeth.
Oh, my word.
Which is a fantastic treasure, one of the Zuidli treasures.
And where is that?
That's in the exhibition rooms.
Goodness. Mm. That's so precious.
Yeah.
And you don't want the moths getting in there, do you?
Oh, moths, I know.
So Zuidli has a wonderfully rich history. Could you give us a very brief history of the castle?
It dates back to about 900 AD, and it's been owned by so many different families, I couldn't count them on two hands. And curiously enough, the family that I belong to, the Dents and Brocklehurst family, have owned it longer than any other in the thousand-year history. And it's full of really the greatest celebrities of our history. I mean, it was owned by Henry VII and then Richard III, who built the Great Banqueting Hall. Then eventually the Crown of Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn were here.
Goodness.
And then finally, our special lady here was Queen Catherine Parr, Henry's last and surviving wife, who fell in love with Thomas Seymour, whose property this was, had been granted to him by the king. And so we had the queen living here, but for sadly short time.
And she is actually buried here?
And she's buried here in the church, yes.
How wonderful.
Yes.
And any other bit of her that strolls around?
Well, that's a good question, yeah. Some people have said that she returns. She had her only child, daughter, Mary, and then she died 5 days after giving birth to Mary. And nobody quite knows what the history of the daughter was, but it's assumed that she died when she was a child. So anyway, there's a myth, I think, that Catherine comes back searching for the soul of her lost daughter.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah, and it's a lovely one.
And where is she seen?
Well, she's been seen by visitors and housemaids. And when we did a documentary about the most haunted houses in England, and Sudley was chosen because of that, she was seen by the cameraman.
Late at night.
Yeah.
Drifting around. Yes.
I've never actually seen her, actually, though. So
well, she's obviously incredibly proud of what you've done here, and so is just most probably giving you a gentle encouragement to carry on.
Well, the more one knows about her, the more one really loves her. She was the most beautiful and remarkable and pure and understanding and, I mean, quite modern and highly intelligent woman. And obviously had a very rough time, really.
Because he didn't have her finished off.
Well, he didn't, but I mean, he was horrible to her. I mean, you know, and he, in that stage of his life, was this gout-ridden, grumpy old man that was all for executing anybody who got in his way. But she survived it, and she was kind to him.
And so she was left with her head on her shoulders.
Also, always being in love with Thomas Seymour. They'd had a little bit of a fling before all this happened, so it's thought, anyway.
Another famous ghost, apparently, is a housekeeper. Do you know anything about this?
I do know about that, because even when I first came to Sudley, there were rumours that Janet had visited recently. She was called Janet, and she was housekeeper here during the war and pre-war, and she was very, very strict with her housemaids and how they were presented, and everything was absolutely pristine. And the major, who was my father-in-law, who I never met because he died before I came here, particularly was about his study, had to have the brass just right and everything, because he's a military man, and he would notice and she would notice if it wasn't. And the poor housemaids would really get a blast if they had left anything unseen. So after she retired and then died in the early 50s, I think, she kept coming back again and intimidating these poor girls by putting her finger under and bringing up some dust or doing tut, tut, tut. And that was the story that I heard. And the dogs, my mother-in-law's standard poodles, their fur would go up on end when Janet was around. So I think that there's something to be said for that.
Definitely. But you've never actually seen her yourself.
I haven't seen her myself.
No, well, she's very pleased about how you're looking after it. And finally, there's a story about George III's near death. Yeah.
Well, George III was taking the waters at Cheltenham Spa, and, you know, people knew about Sudley as a ruin and a historic ruin. And so he came here, fascinated, and climbed up a tower, the Portmare Tower, and slipped on his way, fell down the stairs. And he was caught at the bottom by the farmer's wife. At that time, there was a farmer living in the ruins of the building. And with her, you know, rather comfortable body, broke his fall, and he was so grateful to her that he gave her nephew a position in the army, of a notable sort of reward.
How amazing.
Yeah.
So yet again, a woman coming to the rescue.
Yeah.
It's always very interesting what happened to these houses and the great changes that were going on during the war years. At Beaver, we stored the government documents. So what happened here at Sudley during the war years?
They were asked to house pictures from the Tate and National Gallery. And they were all stacked in the library, row on row on row. And also their head restorer, Mr. Ruhrman, and his family lived at the Bothy, and that was very basic living. So he went on restoring paintings during the war at Sudley.
Family paintings?
No, the paintings from the
Tate. They didn't leave any behind when they took them back.
Well, unfortunately, they took them back when they were restored and the war was over.
Throughout my conversation with Lady Ashcombe, I find myself frequently in awe of her strength, the strength she has shown to overcome the personal tragedy she was experienced, the strength of mind, and the purpose she's shown to grow Sudley Castle, the strength to endure, which is mirrored so beautifully in the preserved ruins in the castle grounds. This is just a quick reminder that you're listening to Duchess, hosted by me, Emma Rutland. And this is a podcast produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. Coming coming up on the podcast, I learn more about the beautifully preserved ruins, and Lady Ashcombe tells me about some of the fabulous art and heirlooms here at Sudeley. But first, I wanted Lady Ashcombe to describe the gorgeous room that we're sitting in. We are sitting in Sudeley Castle today on a wonderful summer's day in June 2021 in the most fabulous room that feels so electric with family paintings, a fabulous bookcase that looks as if Lady Ashcombe could well have designed it herself, beautiful pieces of furniture and the fabulous screen behind me. Tell us all about this room and how it was when you arrived.
Well, when I arrived in my first days here, this was the kitchen and the Aga was in the fireplace opening that we see there, and the pantry was next door where the staircase is. We did a huge renovation here in the 1980s when I married Lord Ashcombe.
Could you tell us about the architecture generally? Because you've got a Tudor castle and then many other influences. So just go through it.
Well, that's really a story and a half, because the earliest standing part, just a little bit, is 13th century, 13th, 14th century, in the reign of King Stephen. But then the Plantagenets, in the form of Richard III, built the great banqueting hall on the site of another castle. So that castle was pulled down and then his castle went up. And then along came Thomas Seymour when Catherine Parr, and he created these long corridors that link the gatehouse to the Tudor castle. Then Oliver Cromwell came along and knocked it all down, but he didn't knock this courtyard down because this was the outer courtyard, less important. And he, in principle, knocked down what he thought, this can't be inhabited anymore, the main part of the castle. And so when the Dents came, they created the courtyard that restored it and part of the old courtyard and left the beautiful ruins as they were and the romantic. That's what's particularly romantic about going around Sudeley. You see little bits of ancient life and ancient pieces and windows and architecture. So there wasn't one architect that came along and put a design on paper and built it. It's evolved.
It's a kaleidoscope of, mm-hmm. yeah. of time, really. Because as it sits at the base of this range of hills, mm-hmm. it must have been built in a very fortified position.
Absolutely.
You feel almost protected by the ridge of hills behind, don't you?
And certainly if you go up on the roof, you can see for miles, and you can see the enemy army coming over, or somebody, you know, that you don't like the look of, for miles away. So they did, obviously it was chosen as a fortress.
As a fortified mm-hmm. site. Do you have a favourite for art here? Is there a favourite piece?
I do. There are some paintings that I love and I admire and I love living with. I don't know if there's one more than the other.
And any portraits of anyone that always appear to be looking at you in a sort of whimsical way?
Well, there's a beautiful portrait that's in the room that's just been flooded, and so it's been taken down. But it's a beautiful painting by Greuze of a lovely young girl with a basket of daisies. And she's doing, he loves me not, loves me not. We don't know where she gets to in the end. And it's also so charming and very comfortable to sort of be in that presence.
So mm-hmm. again, a love story.
Mm-hmm.
So can you just tell us about the Tudor succession painting that you have here at Sudeley?
That was acquired by the old Dents from Strawberry Hill, and it's a painting of national interest and importance. And when Mark died, as his widow, I inherited the paintings and furniture and castle and house that belonged to the family. So it belonged to me, but it was very valuable, and it was very interesting, and it told, you know, a great story. So when my mother-in-law died, I gave it to the nation in lieu of death duties with permission to keep it hanging at Sudeley. And what it is a painting, and it's quite often used in books illustrating the Tudor succession. It was commissioned by Elizabeth to show that the succession to Elizabeth was the correct one, because they were standing on this beautiful carpet and she had the goddess of plenty in her hand and the goddess of peace behind her. Whereas Mary, slightly diminished size, was not on the royal carpet, had one foot on it, and she was married to Philip of Spain, and he had the god of war on his side. And so it was propaganda.
Amazing. Yeah. And where is that painting now?
Well, it's hanging on view to the public in one of the rooms that we opened the castle.
So it's still here?
Oh, yes.
So it wasn't removed?
Well, it was removed, but we got it back again because we argued and we put it in this vast environmental case and bulletproof and air-conditioned inside it and all sorts of things so that they couldn't say we weren't looking after it properly. No, we got it back again.
Oh, well done you. Yeah. Because so often, without the art that's on the walls, these houses don't tell the story that they're meant to have because it's layers of history and we're just a moment in time preserving, protecting and defending.
That's right.
One of the things that you've been so successful here at Sudeley is what you've done with your gardens. Tell us all what your vision was and what you've been able to create.
What I wanted to do was to tell the history of Sudeley through the garden. And I've had Rosemary Veery help me in one instance, and then I worked with some rose garden designer, Jane Fernley Whittingstall, for many years and created the Queen's Garden. And we took the design for the Knot Garden off the portrait from the Tudor succession of Queen Elizabeth from her brocaded dress. And so I've tried to relate history in the gardens.
And if you were going to go out into your gardens, where would you find that was just special to sit?
Well, try the Queen's Garden, the Rose Garden. It's laid out on a Tudor parterre, and we know that Catherine Parr and Lady Jane Grey would walk these same paths and enjoy the roses. I mean, Sudeley's in the most beautiful setting, really, in, you know, at the bottom of the escarpment of the Cotswold Hills. And on the terrace, the views all around the castle are wonderful.
So there's always something that's taking your attention and that you bring here to bring alive at Sudeley.
Well, I think we all need to adapt and be inventive to keep the spirit of these houses alive. I mean, my mother-in-law used to open the house maybe once every Thursday, and the old butler and old governess showed people around. And in those days, they came to look at a few pictures, some furniture or something. But I mean, that doesn't work anymore. That's not enough, no. We slightly have to reinvent ourselves at the moment because we've lost our foreign market, which was 40% of our visitors were Americans, Asians. And so we've got to rethink what it is that appeals to local people and children and families. I mean, foreigners loved everything. Catherine Parr, Henry VIII, the Rose Gardens, the Ghost.
You think that's changed now, do you, Liz? Do you think that it is a time where things are going to be quite different
Well, certainly for the moment. I mean, if we want to increase our numbers back to where they're healthy, we have to get 40% more people from the community or staycationers or from the Cotswolds who drive maybe an hour, but not more. And so we're looking at what is it they'd really like to do if they come out for the day. And yes, of course, they still like the history and everything, but I think they like activity and things to do, especially for children. It's for people to come and enjoy the house, the estate, the history, but also the contemporary fun and enjoyment of being here.
So that entrepreneurial sort of American spirit of can do has done wonders for Sudeley. And you have two children with Ma.
I had two children with Mark, Henry and Molly.
And Henry and Molly together have taken on helping you run it today. Is that right?
Well, they don't do so much to do with the opening business. That's more, I run that. But they manage the estate.
And one day, do they see themselves taking the mantle forward?
They do. I don't quite know what they're going to do about it, but I think they love Sudeley.
The children grew up here. Mm-hmm. So did they enjoy growing up?
Oh, yes, they enjoyed it. But, you know, they played tricks on our visitors and they were children, yes. They dressed up in the armour. They did some naughty things and some good things, but they loved it, yes.
Yeah. And for all of the things they did, they made it feel like a home, which is really they are. Mm-hmm. They are living, breathing homes with children. And
that's what they think about it. And we live in it like a home. I mean, we eat in the kitchen and we...
And what part of the house do you actually live in?
The part of the house is open to the public, and then it's divided into three medium-sized apartments. I live in the middle. Molly, my daughter, lives on that side, and Henry, my son, lives on the other side. Henry got the best dining area. I got this beautiful room, and Molly got the best view, so we can't argue about, you know, who's had the better deal.
That's perfect, yeah. And it all works for me.
Yes, it works well.
Do you feel a responsibility to preserve this for future generations?
Yes, I do, yes.
And how do you feel about the future of Sudeley?
Well, I feel that Sudeley is a historic house. I think it belongs to the culture, even though it's privately owned. And I feel that quite strongly because it's not a house that was particularly built for a noble family. It evolved, and it evolved through the marching history of time. And so I think that it's totally correct and proper that it's open to the public. And that's what I've really enjoyed doing. I haven't resented that at all. I mean, you know, I haven't thought, oh gosh, why do we have to have people around? That's what it's supposed to be. And I think that Henry and Molly, I'm sure, feel the same way. It's, you know, they've grown up with it and they've lived with it, and that's what they know Sudeley. And I think every generation puts their imprint.
And that's what, in the end, good presence does, doesn't it? Good custodianship and showing one's children how to be with heritage. Because none of it actually, Liz, belongs to us, does it?
I don't feel that. It belongs to all of us.
And the nation.
And one's a steward of it, yes, for time.
And so
for
no period time, of time is there an arrogance about it. You're committed in a very passionate way to keep it together.
That's the way I feel, really, because I suppose being American, not having historic houses of this age in the United States, to me it seems absolutely appropriate, right, correct that this house is shared by the public.
Well, aren't they, and the history of Sudeley Castle, extraordinarily lucky to have had and have such a wonderful custodian as Liz. Now, if sitting here today, I think of all the great people and love affairs and women that have shared this house with you and they're looking down at you, what would you say to six generations before? What would you say sitting in that chair today?
Well, first of all, I would thank Catherine Parr for being such a wonderful, beautiful example of womankind. And to be able to be in the home that she lived in and to follow her life and understand her has been a huge privilege and given an opportunity to do that. A great admirer of hers. And of course, I'm a great admirer of Emma Dent, who preceded me by a couple of generations. But there's so much of her still here, her curtains and fabrics and textile collection and her diaries and her words and the histories that she wrote about Sudeley. It's really given us the opportunity to open the house to the public.
If they were in the room with us, sitting around this table, what would you say to Emma?
Well, first of all, I'm a little bit intimidated by Emma. So I would say, I hope you approve of what we've done in a rather humble way.
And to Catherine?
And Catherine, I would say, how lovely and what an extraordinary life you lived. And how did you manage that? And, you know, how brave you are.
Oh, that's wonderful. Because actually, there aren't many people you can reach out to when you're living in heritage, are there? And so often the women of the past give us the strength to go forward.
That's very true, yes.
And as we sit here on this day, I'd like you to talk to six generations down the line.
Goodness, that's a big one, yes. Well, I hope that you still know Sudeley and you still feel that it's part of your life. And if you don't, and if it isn't, please go and see if it's still there and what's happened, because it was the most fascinating part of my life and your family heritage.
So you'd give them a leg up and say, keep flying the flag. What an afternoon it's been. And from Sudeley Castle and meeting this great iconic lady who's run this building for so many decades. Thank you, Lady Ashcombe.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
When Lady Ashcombe spoke about Catherine, she used the word brave. I think in many ways that word is fitting for Lady Ashcombe herself. Lady Ashcombe has led Sudeley Castle with such determination and diligence. She has done so even through facing so many challenges. That is absolutely my definition of bravery. Thank you so much, Lady Ashcombe, for all your insight, your bravery, and for joining me today on this podcast. Thank you, listeners, as well, for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Next week, I travel to the beautiful Birdsall House to meet Lady Cara Willoughby. In the episode, Lady Cara tells me about the incredible, swashbuckling life story of Britain's most reckless naval officer. Lady Cara reveals Birdsall's influence on the work of Jane Austen, and I learn what a ghost clearer is. See you then. I'd also just like to thank once again our wonderful sponsor, Circle DNA, for supporting the podcast. If you want to learn more about the great work Circle DNA do and make a real investment into your health, visit their website and use the code THEDUCHESS40 for 40% off their DNA test kits. Now, listeners, on this season of the podcast, we wanted to show our appreciation for all your wonderful messages of support. So we decided every week I'll be reading sections of a piece of the correspondence from you. This week we have a beautifully written message from Caitlin in the US. Madam, thank you very much for gracing us with your new podcast. As an unmarried American career woman about to purchase her first home, my life is quite different from yours. In America, the finest homes tend to sway with trends, buffeted by an evolving sense of progress and impermanence. I therefore ask humbly for your counsel. What resources might you recommend to a woman just building her home so as to instill in it a sense of solidity, warmth, and timelessness? Wishing you all the very best, sincerely, Caitlin. Thank you, Caitlin, for your wonderful message and your wishes for us running Beaver here. I'm sure it will be absolutely beautiful. I would say one of the key things for me in creating a home, and particularly when you're building it from start, is to take something from your past to restore it and take it into your future. This always brings an element of being there forever. Couple of quick notes before we go. Important ones. Make sure you subscribe to Duchess the podcast so you get automatically notified about new episodes wherever you listen to a podcast. I want to know about you and what you think of the show, so please be sure to send me your comments and tell me about your own lineage and the women who have inspired you in your life. Please write to me on duchess@duchessthepodcast.com. And if there are any stately homes in particular you'd like me to visit, do send your suggestions to me as soon as possible. I've started a newsletter that includes all this and more and comes straight to your inbox. It's really easy to sign up at duchessthepodcast.com. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast, presented by me, Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. From Beaver Castle, Lady Violet Manners is the executive producer. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kasra Ferruzia is the audio and visual engineer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Additional creative support from Selena Christofis and Theo Banner. Thanks for listening to Duchess, the podcast.